Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle, Thursday edition of the program. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we got the Professor John Clayton, as we do every day at that time. Paul Moyer will join us at 4:30. Always a fun conversation with him. And coming up at 5 o'clock, Seahawks kicker Jason Myers will be in our player spotlight. So stick around for that. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Apparently, Brandon Marshall, you remember him. He was here for a hot minute.
Do remember him.
Yeah, he was doing something with Nick Wright on something called First Things First. Not exactly sure what that is. But they were talking about the Seahawks and talking about Russell Wilson and different things like that. And I guess the idea of, is Russell good enough to overcome this defense being what it is? That question was proposed, and here's Brandon Marshall's response.
I don't think so. I don't think Russell is good enough to carry this team when that defense is playing like that. Historically bad through six games. We all know the stats. This is a great signing by the Seattle Seahawks. Carlos Dunlap, he is so disruptive. He can do everything. He can stop the run. He can be aggressive and a disruptor in the pass game. This is a really good signing for them. And you also got to remember, Damian Snack Harris, Nick, is sitting on the sideline. So he's going to come in and be a disruptor. You have Jamal Adams coming off that groin injury. I think this historically bad defense can easily go to good when they get those three guys on the field at the same time, Nick.
I absolutely agree with him on everything he said there. First of all, I don't take that as a shot on Russell Wilson. I think it's more commentary on the defense. And I would say I don't think there's a quarterback in the league that you could say, well, they can overcome that defense. Now, that version, the defense that has been prior to the arrival of Dunlap, we'll see what he does. We'll see what it's like with Jamal Adams back and with Snacks Harrison and, you know, everybody healthy. We haven't seen it. So just based on who they've been through the first six games, Tom Brady couldn't overcome it. Aaron Rodgers wouldn't overcome it. Russell Wilson can't overcome it. And you could bring in Peyton Manning or anybody else from the past. I don't think there's a quarterback out there that could overcome a historically bad defense. I just think it's too much to ask. So I saw some people had commented, taking shots at Brandon Marshall. And I'm thinking that's not an insult. I think he's being real. It's not even commentary on Russell, really. It's more about the defense.
Yeah, well, and he made it that clear because I think he called it historically bad like four times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and look, we'll see how long it takes for Carlos Dunlap to get involved. Remember Sheldon Richardson telling us, it took me a while to get going, you know, and he made some plays in this defense, but is that going to be Snacks Harrison? Is that going to be Carlos Dunlap? Because, you know, now all of a sudden you look at, okay, you got Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap. You've got, hopefully, Rasheem Green's coming back. We'll see what we get out of L.J. Collier and Alton Robinson and, you know, Daryl Taylor. But, you know, you've got Dunlap and Mayo on each side, and then you got Jaron Reed and Snacks Harrison in the middle. So that should help, right? It sounds a lot better, doesn't it?
I mean, decidedly better.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I don't know if is Puna Ford – been disappointing. He made a play the other day. He's, you know, they just haven't. Again, I'll have to go back and just look at, you know, it from a general view. Usually I'm looking at individual guys and performances and stuff, but is there really time to get to the quarterback? And that's the bigger problem. And I know we'll get into this later, but whether or not they should play tighter defense as far as coverage goes and, you know, some of the failings of Trey Flowers and, you know, with guys in and out, Dunbar's been in and out. So if I still am holding on to the thought that they have enough talent on this defense to turn it around. But right now, the way that they're playing it, I don't think that there's any indication that you would think all of a sudden, okay, they're going to turn it around in this San Francisco 49er game, especially if you don't have Jamal Adams out there.
Yeah, and it's looking like Adams more and more that he's pretty questionable, pretty iffy whether he plays on Sunday or not. It seems more likely that we'll see him in Buffalo. But, no, I think you guys are right. And, yeah, you can take the cynical view, which is what I usually take. You know, it can't get worse. And so whether it's a change in philosophy, a change in scheme, approach, all those words. I like the idea of all these different players that you guys are talking about, especially Snacks Harrison and Carlos Dunlap. I was encouraged yesterday. I know that we're looking at Dunlap as giving a boost to the pass rush, which I'm sure he'll do. Clayton was talking yesterday that he thinks he's going to get 5 sacks in the last 9 games, and you would take that from Carlos Dunlap. But he's also a good run defender. And Snacks Harrison, we know, is a run stuffer too. And when you got the 49ers coming in, they ran the ball 37 times against New England. They did the same thing the week before against the Rams. And Danny O'Neill wrote a post for 710sports.com this morning talking about San Francisco's best way to beat Seattle, as banged up as they are. And I know the Seahawks are banged up too, but San Francisco has been banged up all year, and even more so than the Seahawks. They need to run the ball, and they need to keep the ball and win time of possession to have a chance, because they're not going to win a shootout with Garoppolo throwing to what few receivers he has.
Boy, I don't know if I agree with that. I feel like...
You disagree with something that I say on this show? Really?
I feel like that their best chance is doing what Jimmy does well, which is check down and just eat up that middle of the field, and that can sustain the drive. Now, if he's not accurate, that changes. It could be a quick three and out. But I think when I watch them, the couple times I've watched them this year, they really do, and I know it's kind of a shot at quarterbacks. I don't even really mean it. He is a kind of a game manager. They really don't ask him to be electric out there and chucking the ball down the field. They really are, you know, take what the defense gives you kind of an offense when it comes to their passing game. And we've seen this pass defense is the worst in the NFL. The middle of the field always seems to be open. I don't know if that's going to change in this game. So if I'm the 49ers in Shanahan, I'm thinking this plays into exactly what we want to do with Jimmy G. And that is just short, safe passes. We'll chew up the time. We'll have long extended drives. If it amounts to a field goal, so be it. But we're going to eat that clock up and just slowly chip away, working our way down the field with, you know, little 5-yard, 7-yard passes.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm not making excuses. I think it's really hard to play linebacker these days because of all of the play action stuff. And if you look at what they do, I heard a stat the other day that, like, was some ridiculous number, like 70% of the throws were play action pass. You know, where, you know, they're faking a fly sweep, and then he's pitching it every once in a while, and then he's dropping back and passing and throwing screens and things like that. And they've not been great at reading those things, and I think it's hard. Again, I think it's really difficult. But yeah, and look at their, you know, I know a lot of this is because of injury, but they've had 11 different guys carry the ball. Mm-hmm. And so, and they're good at the run game. They're number 8 as far as, you know, running the ball, 138 yards, and Seahawks are okay stopping the run. It's been more about the pass, definitely, right?
Yeah.
But they're number 13. They're giving up 110 yards. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like they're giving up a little bit more than that. But that's the thing that worries me the most is that, yeah, I think he's more of a game manager. And then, you know, the run game is what scares me the most, is that you, because it's just so well executed by the 49ers. That Kyle Juszczyk kid, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of numbers or anything, but, I mean, he is a huge part of blocking. And, I mean, he only has, what, like 7 carries for 36 yards, but, you know, he scored a couple of touchdowns. He's really good in play action. He's a really good blocker. And he's one of those guys that they overwhelm the defense at the point of attack, where they'll pull a guard and then they'll have a motion tight end and he'll go up in the B gap, and then the fullback will go up in the B gap, and it's like you can't get enough guys over there to and they just execute it so well that I feel like that's the number one thing. This is something that's said in every meeting room in the NFL: stop the run. If you're on defense, stop the run first, and then everything else. Yeah, can Jimmy G beat you downfield? Is he a deep ball thrower? Is he, you know, I mean, probably not. But I feel like they can beat you with a run.
Well, yeah, I feel the same way, Dave. And noting what Danny said again in his story at 710sports.com this morning, the Seahawks, the last 2 games, have given up 360 rushing yards, 200 to Minnesota, and then 160 last week with Murray and everybody running. And they only gave up 330 combined in the first 4 games. So, you know, which run defense you're going to see. But that's paramount, I think, is to see what they can do. And you noted this, Dave. San Francisco is just plug and play with the running backs. You know, here in Seattle, you sit there and you go, well, okay, you love Carson. but he might not play. And if you got Hyde, and if Hyde can play, and it sounds like he will, indications are that he will, that the hamstring isn't as bad as they thought maybe initially, okay, that's not too much of a downgrade. But you're really concerned if Hyde can't play, because then you're down to DJ Dallas and Travis Homer. And maybe they'll come through, but certainly not to the degree that Carson would. And yet in San Francisco, they lose their top guy, Mostert, and then they go to Coleman, they lose him. And then they're still good to go with Jeff Wilson going for over 100 yards before he got hurt against New England. And then they go down to Jermichael Hasty, an undrafted kid out of Baylor, and he's tearing it up. I think we're going to hear Hasty's name quite a bit on Sunday, too.
Another comment from the duo on that podcast or that show. Nick Wright says, currently the Seahawks are being viewed as on par with the 49ers by oddsmakers, and talks about what Jamal Adams can bring to the team in his return is more important than whatever Dunlap might do.
The question really is right now, I think more than about Carlos Dunlap, to Brandon's point, when Jamal Adams comes back, what does he bring Seattle? Because Wilds, my friends in Las Vegas, the odds makers,
oh boy.
I don't know if anyone else has noticed, they're cooling a bit on the Seahawks. The Seahawks are at home this week against San Francisco. They are 3-point favorites. That is our friends in Vegas telling us. We think the Niners and Seahawks about the same quality of team.
That's not surprising. I mean, they're at home. You don't have a crowd, so you don't get that advantage, which I would assume odds makers would build in typically, you know, when you got 67,000 maniacs in CenturyLink. So that's gone. And we've been talking about the defense all season long. So that
but
didn't
don't
say
you think,
anything
Bob,
that surprising to me there.
Yeah, don't you think, though, 2 weeks ago when the after the 49ers lost to Miami and the Seahawks were unbeaten, that spread would have been more 6.5,
oh, yeah.
7?
Yeah, and then they've gotten a look at the defense and the Seahawks lost, and, you know, the Niners have turned things around and look formidable, to say the very least. So, yeah, that you're the resident gambling expert. Does that line make sense to you?
Well, when I saw it, I thought 3 looked a little low to me. You know, I can understand why Vegas. I mean, San Francisco's looked really red hot the last 2 weeks, and great wins for them. And, you know, a team that was in the Super Bowl and trying to stay in the thick of it in the NFC West. But, yeah, I don't know. I kind of like Seattle given 3, if that's all. And it looks like it's getting closer to 2.5 than it is 3.5.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Last year, they matched up well, if you believe in matchups or not.
Mm-hmm.
They beat them down there, and there were close games, and there was missed field goals involved. But, you know, with the Rams, I feel like the Rams have always given them a tough time. You mentioned it yesterday, Jim. If they, you know, if they don't miss that, if Zuerlein doesn't miss that kick last year, they get swept by the Rams. But, shoot, they were 1 foot away from beating the Niners twice, you know, in both very close games. So maybe they match up well. But, you know, the one thing I didn't understand is that, number one, Brandon Marshall was, you know, talking about the schedule, and he was saying that he didn't think that the Buffalo Bills were that good. And, you know, they lost to Tennessee and Kansas City. Now, I know that they were behind the Jets, but, you know, it's a division rival. But those are the two teams they lost to, pretty good team. So I do think that's going to be really tough. And then the other thing is Nick Wright says that the Seahawks are historically bad in the 1 o'clock Eastern time game, which I'm like, well, I think they went either 4-0 or 5-0 last year, and they're two.
Yeah, they're like 10-0 the last 10 times they played 10 a.m. games.
Yeah, the guy Nick Wright. So I mean, he got that wrong, but I mean, they're 2-0 this year, and they're either four. I couldn't remember if Carolina or Philly, if that started later, was that a 1 o'clock game Eastern or not, one of those. But either way, you know, they're either 4-0 or 5-0 in that time slot. So that has not bothered
old
them
talking
in quite some time. Yeah. So, but, and I do think Buffalo's good, and I think it's going to be really difficult to beat them too. So, but this is a tough stretch, man. And if it starts off with a loss here and you're giving up that much yardage like they have been, I think that people are going to start to look, including the odds makers, they're going to start to look a lot differently at this team, unfortunately.
Well, obviously defense has been the focal point for very good reason. Now, Ken Norton is a guy who's taken a lot of heat during this time and last season as well. He spoke with the media yesterday. He was asked a follow-up question when he said they need to play a complete game on defense of how they do that. He says, and here's his response.
Well, if we knew that, we actually do it. But We're working hard at it. I think that, you know, we've played a lot of plays. The guys are really pressing and working hard to get it done. But it hadn't come through yet. You know, one quarter, two quarter, three quarters, and, you know, minutes left, you know, things don't go the way we expect. But at the same time, there's a lot of work being done, a lot of work being done to get it to get a full game in.
All right, two things on that. First of all, I really appreciate his blunt honesty. He doesn't know. If we knew that, we'd be doing it. The other part of it is, I don't know that you say that. As much as I appreciate that honesty, that doesn't instill confidence in anybody. And you hear that from a defensive coordinator. You want to hear some level of reassurance, even if he doesn't believe in himself. I think he's got to take a tip from Pete Carroll and be like, hey, they're competing like crazy. We feel good about things. You know, we got to, Snacks Harrison's going to be there. Jamal's on his way back. Things are really looking up on some level, because when you go out there and say after six games, well, if we knew how to do it, we would be doing it. I don't love that. I don't love hearing that as a Seahawks fan.
What do you say?
I like I said, I was just saying, maybe you'd paint a rosy picture like, hey, these guys they're going to get it figured out. I believe in these guys. We got guys coming back. We've been, you know, beat up. You know, I know it's kind of BS on some level, but some of it's true.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, with Ken Norton, and, you know, everybody's attacking Ken Norton right now. And I get it. He's the defensive coordinator. But, and Mar, I'll ask you, I mean, is there any coach that's more involved, maybe Bill Belichick, that's directly involved in the defense as much as Pete Carroll? And he said as much on Monday. He said, mm-hmm. Look, this is me. This is on me. So, I mean, they're doing it basically together, and there's no way that Ken, I just don't believe, is making calls that wildly are straying from what Pete Carroll wants to do. I mean, they talk about this during the week in different situations. So, you know, and then the other thing is, I mean, they're coaching a defense. I wonder if there's just look, we're all just searching in the dark here for answers, right? But, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the lack of trust. You know, as far as like rookies last year, not getting them in and playing as much. And then also it kind of looks to me like they don't quite trust their defense to not give up big plays. And so they've kept, you know, everything in front of them. But, you know, and look, whatever you think about it, they've coached this defense that has given up a lot of yards to an 11-5 season last year. They ended up 12-6 overall with the playoffs. This year they're 5-1. And so, you know, they're 17-7 coaching with this style, and I have to believe that they're coaching it to what they think their players – I mean, do you think the players – here's one thing that Jaron Reed said last year. He said – we asked him, they had 10 quarterback hits and 5 sacks in the Monday Night Football game. Mm-hmm. We asked him, what happened there? What, there was nothing like that going into this game. And Jaron Reed said they finally turned us loose. So, I mean, are they playing like, you know, we were talking about two-gapping where – you know, you're not going upfield. You're just kind of going laterally. Are the linebackers just playing laterally? Are they playing off too much with their corners because they don't trust that they have the talent to not get beat deep? I don't know if that's their strategy, you know. So it's kind of – we talked to Ryan Neal today, and it was him or Shaquem. We talked to both of them. They're both fantastic. But I think it was Shaquem that said that, you know, there was a big meeting that they had, you know, the defensive guys. He said coaches were involved too. You know, because a lot of times what happens is you kick the coaches out and say, hey, we need to have a player meeting. And the coaches love that, right? They want the guys taking the initiative to, you know, hey, come on, we got to get this thing. We got to decide together that we're gonna you know, bring this thing back, and, you know, we're gonna play harder, and we're gonna be more responsible, and we're gonna, you know, put it on ourselves. And but he said that the coaches were in there too. So it'd be very interesting. We keep talking about being a fly on the wall in there in some of those defensive meetings, just because, again, I do feel like they have the talent. I mean, is Bobby Wagner a Hall of Fame linebacker? Yeah, he absolutely is. You know, KJ has been playing really well. You know, they paid Jaron Reed $11 million, whatever you think about him, and maybe they're not turning him loose like he talked about last year. So, you know, I think they're still trying to figure out what's the best way to use the personnel that they have, and hopefully that gets settled in when, number one, they get Jamal Adams back playing, you know, consistently at strong safety, and then start to work Snacks Harrison and Carlos Dunlap in here. I'll say this, Schneider sure has been doing his work, right? I mean, he brought in Dunbar, who's been, I think he's been great. I mean, he got beat the other day, but it was a tough throw, and you're going to get beat as a corner. You're going to get beat. But he's made a bunch of really good tackles and good plays in the run game and some good passes broken up. You know, he brought in Jamal Adams. You know, we'll see about the draft choices, but Jordan Brooks sure looks good to me right now. He's had one good game in a row, okay? One in a row, baby.
Listen, with this defense, that's good enough.
That's where you start. Yeah. And maybe Daryl Taylor, Alton Robinson, I don't know why that he only got 7 or 8 snaps the other day. Maybe he starts to come around and it's just taken him a while. But in the meantime, I feel like they're coaching it up in a way that they feel like they're comfortable with and that they can win with. And really what happened the other day, I mean, this is nothing new. They've been giving up lots of yardage, but the one critical error they made, they lost the turnover battle.
Yeah,
I mean, they went +2 against Atlanta, even against New England, +2 Dallas, +1 Miami, +1 Minnesota, and then -1 Arizona. So, you know, that's how they have been living the last 2 years, and that's where the critical error took place.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two. The Mariners have declined the 2021 option for D. Gordon. They also declined the original option on Kendall Graveman, but re-signed him to a one-year, $1.25 million deal.
Yeah, the D. Gordon one is the least surprising thing ever. I think they were trying to move him, obviously, during the season, before the season. His contract was a little punitive, so it didn't happen. But he was a decent player here. Good locker room, good clubhouse guy. You know, he had a good attitude about how things went last season, more importantly, where he wasn't playing in a shortened season. I mean, there were, you'd go games in a row where he didn't play at all, and then he's kind of playing all over, outfield, infield. So I'll pull for D wherever he ends up.
Yeah, I sure will miss him. He was a great guy to have around, and he was the guy that kind of set the tone as far as the culture goes in that clubhouse. And then Graveman, didn't Kendall Graveman have some kind of a, I remember Shannon talking about him being like comeback player of the year. And then didn't he have some kind of a bone thing?
Yeah,
going
like a
on?
Neck contusion. Yeah.
I think he had a non-cancerous like tumor in his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, but Graveman, you know, re-signing him, they really liked what they saw from him, not only on the field but in the clubhouse. And yeah, I'm with you guys on Gordon. I just, you know, I wonder, you know, it didn't work out. He didn't like playing in center field. It just wasn't really a fit for him here. And as a leadoff hitter, when they brought him in, he wasn't a control the zone guy. We remember he didn't like taking pitches. So, but yeah, like you guys, I'm wishing him well too.
Russell Wilson and his wife Sierra have donated $1.75 million to a local charter school called Cascade Midway Academy. The school reportedly suffered financially due to the pandemic, and now it will be rebranded to its new name, Why Not You Academy.
Good for them. That's great. Putting their money where their mouth is, trying to make a difference in their community. What else can you say? I mean, Russell is a guy who's been doing that since he was a rookie in different versions, whether going to the children's hospital every single week or, you know, he's philanthropic, and he's been that way since the day he got here, and it continues. So it's a very cool thing to see.
I love that couple. I mean, I've talked about the times that I've come across Ciara, just a beautiful person in inside and out, and they live it. They don't just talk it, they live it. So, and Russ showing up, like you said, at the children's hospital every week, it's awesome having them here. And Russ has just turned out to be everything that you would want in a quarterback, both on and off the field. And and I love that his wife is just such a sweet, caring, giving person. Really cool having them here in Seattle.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that type of donation, and I'm looking at Why Not You Academy as a new type of high school, a high school that focuses on building achievement, community, and empowerment, a high school that prepares students to create and thrive in the careers of tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, everything he does, going to, like you're saying, Bob, Children's Hospital and helping kids out, and boy, everything that Russell does off the field, on the field, he's just a winner in every way.
All right, coming up, Pete Carroll spoke about Carlos Dunlap once the trade was finalized yesterday. So how will he be used in this defense? We'll let you hear what the coach had to say. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Pete Carroll spoke yesterday after the trade became official with Carlos Dunlap. He had a few things to say in terms of how he sees Dunlap being used. He says he'll play at the Leo spot.
Yeah, that's the spot he would play for us, and we're moving him around and doing a lot of things that really fit his style. Play on the edge a bunch, and he's always been an edge pass rusher and a disruptor. He's been a really good run player, too, over the years. You know, he's been very effective. He's got really long levers and has always been able to run and move his feet and all that kind of stuff. So he just fits the spot just right.
Now, I saw a text yesterday, Dave, from one of our listeners who said, would you guys stop saying Leo? This is the first I've ever heard of it. Now everybody's using this term. Like it just came out, like single high safety or something. It was their version of single high safety. And they're like, what does that even mean? First of all, it's not that new of a term. Second of all, how would you explain it to somebody, the Leo position versus any other?
Well, maybe they just started listening to sports talk radio in Seattle. because it's something that we've talked about. You know, for instance, when Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril came in, mm-hmm. there's a five technique. The guy on the outside shoulder of the tackle is where he would line up, and that would be the five technique, which was Michael Bennett. And then coming off the edge, you know, and is on the weak side usually.
Without the tight end.
No tight end there. Yeah, you're the outside, you know, quick twitch pass rusher. And a lot of times you'll see those guys go upfield and then come back underneath and run a stunt with the defensive tackle.
And that was Cliff.
Yeah.
Cliff was a Leo.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, he's not necessarily that body type, but, you know, Pete thinks he's a good enough edge rusher that you put him out there and get him isolated. Now, a lot of times what happens is you get chipped by a running back, you know, on the way out, or you get double teamed in that regard, or they'll leave, you know, maybe bring a tight end or somebody in. You know, that they do, the Seahawks do that all the time with Chris Carson. Mm-hmm. They'll split him out, empty backfield, and then they'll bring him inside to block somebody. So sometimes that will happen. But, yeah, that's more. But I was telling Mora before, I think we get too caught up on body types, and he's just a good football player. I mean, does he look like Cliff Avril? No, not really. He's a bigger guy, and I don't know if he has the speed that he has, but he's just a good pass rusher and a good football player. And the thing you hear from, you know, during this trade of all the people that have covered him is that he's disruptive, and he's really disruptive in the run game as well. So that's, yeah, he's going to be much. It's too bad they don't have him ready for this week. I mean, they just made the trade, but yeah,
I still don't understand the protocol for a guy who's in the league and is going through that protocol. Yeah. I still don't get the 6-day thing. Somebody that's on the street that's not on a roster, I get it. They haven't been going through the testing and all that, I understand. But this going from one organization to another, I don't really understand.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to take as much caution as they can, but given how they test them and everything and every day, and you get your results back pretty quickly, it is kind of mystifying. But yeah, I just think get him out there. Pete says he's that guy. He fits that mold. Nobody would know better than Pete. But also, even if not, you know, if you put Benson Mayoa out there opposite of him, maybe you put Benson in the, you know, the Leo position and him in the five technique position, that's fine too. I think they were transitioning to like a 3-4 in Cincinnati, it sounds like, and he's a hand in the dirt type of guy that's going to rush off the edge, and they'll stunt him and do all kinds of things. So he's just, again, just a good football player. Let's just get him on the field, man. Get as much out of him as you possibly can. He wants more reps. Come on, man. Come on, baby. Because that was the thing. You know, all of a sudden his reps, you know, started dropping off. And then I think Pete said something about keeping Mayoa fresh and things like that. But, you know, usually you don't hear too much about the defensive ends and keeping them fresh. But it is true. You had a number. How many percentage? What was the percentage of snaps that Benson Mayoa has?
He's 70, on a ridiculous pace. Yeah,
72%.
72.
I think in the last game, wasn't he like 90 or something?
Yeah. Before this season, I think 49% was the most that he played down there in Oakland.
Yeah. So, and I saw he had back to back games of 90%. So yeah, he's getting lots of. You know, usually see Bobby, KJ. You know, those guys are 100%. But yeah, for the bigger guys, but. But, yeah, that will help him a little bit, too. And if they can bring Alton Robinson on. And, again, there's the trust factor because I thought he looked really good in that Dallas game, Alton Robinson.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all of a sudden the snaps start to fade off a little bit. And maybe there's things that are happening at practice that we're not seeing. But Yeah, it's just going to give them more pass rushers. And again, you know, you talk about having Mayoa, Dunlap, Reed, Snacks Harrison, and then you still got Puna Ford to and Brian Monet to rotate in and out of there.
Forget about Collier.
Get the young guys going. I did forget about Collier.
Jim, before you jump in quickly, I just want to play this Pete cut where he's kind of talking about what Dave just said there about rotating him, helping keep Mayoa fresh.
Yeah, he's an every-down player. He's an every-down player, but we'll try to keep him as fresh as possible and really maintain the rotation. It'll really help Benson a lot and Alton Robinson, too. You know, those guys will all continue to rotate. It's going to help us a lot just to be able to keep us fresh. We know that if we can keep Benson fresh from too many reps, that he really can be effective for us. So hopefully that will happen from this point forward.
Yeah, you know, the thing that surprised me, though, is because I was looking forward to seeing Dunlap and Mayoa out there at the same time, and I'm sure we will see that, Dave. But Carroll said that, you know, talking about both of them playing the Leo position and getting Mayoa some rest, and I'm thinking, well, yeah, I understand where you're coming from with that, but I'd like to see both of those guys out there at the same time. They're your best pass rushers, so you'd think that they would draw double teams or some type of attention that might help each other out in that respect. And I would also go as far to say that, you know what would help the fatigue factor? If they got a few more three and outs, and then maybe guys could play 100% of the snaps and there wouldn't be so many.
I wonder if Ken's thought about that. You think he's thought, you know what we ought to do?
Well,
guys, I'm going to try something crazy. What if we go three and out? Would that be restful? Would you guys be interested in something like that?
Yeah, love the three and outs.
Big fan of the three and out. One more quickly from Pete Carroll on just talking about the deal and how they're always involved in who's out there.
No, this happened more, in really rapid fashion. I don't know the exact day when he hooked it up. But like I tell you, John's in on everything that he can possibly know about and when there was an opportunity there, he jumped on it to see if we could work something out. And we're always looking. And there's other guys that are out there that we've been looking at as well, in all spots that are available. You know, the names start to pop up here at this time of year, and so this was one that fit exactly what we needed, and really pleased to get it done.
So they're looking at all spots right now. November 3rd is the trade deadline. Quickly, we're gonna hit the break here, but. What spot should they address next? Assuming they're looking at other names, because I look at cornerback. I don't feel great about the depth. I don't know about Shaq's injuries. Dunbar's been kind of consistently dealing with injuries.
They got DJ Reed coming off they like. That's been on the practice squad.
Lyndon Stevens, I don't know anything about. Maybe yeah. He's great. Maybe he's great.
I watched him in camp. He was good. He had a good camp. My position would be running back. That's the one I worry about the most right now because they're pretty banged up. And maybe it's just shell shock because what happened last year.
Yeah. Jim, what about you?
Yeah, I'd say cornerback right now. And you think about Griffin and maybe being out and Dunbar not having the best season and you're going to shift him over to the left side. You got Trey Flowers over on the right side. Nobody likes the way he's been playing this year, it seems. So, yeah, I'd go with cornerback.
You know, Schneider's doing his part.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
He's doing it.
Yep.
You go down swinging. Like I said, I like the move. We'll see if it works. Even if it doesn't, I'll still praise the move. He's being active, proactive. All right, coming up, 49ers GM John Lynch joined John Clayton today. They talked about how defenses are having to change their approach with the offenses soaring this season in the league. We'll hear what he had to say coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you've got a radio in your home. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. Becomes a radio right there for you. The Professor John Clayton will join us at the top of the hour. And speaking of John Clayton, he had a guest, 49ers GM John Lynch was on the program today with the professor. They talked about a few different things, including how much harder things have gotten for defenses and why Jamal Adams is a guy that fits today's game very well.
You're asked to defend every blade of grass. And what I mean by that, game used to be played in between the hashes and vertically. And occasionally you'd get outside the numbers. Now you know, with these jet sweeps and, you know, everything, motion flying every which way, defenses are required to play both vertically and horizontally. And so they make you defend the entire field. And so the premium for guys who can play in space, that's why a Jamal Adams is such a gifted football player because he can eat space in a hurry. He can make tackles in space. Dre Greenlaw does that extremely well for us.
Sounds like an old guy that is longing for the days of old school football.
I think later on he'll say something, so I won't spoil it. But,
yeah, I think it's the next one.
He's right, man. And the other thing is, it's like I said, it's really hard to play linebacker now. The whole RPO thing, and you look, and there's still some things that, you know, I mean, once the running back clears the quarterback, get back in your zone, okay? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of that stuff where they got motion one way, and then they throw a screen another way, or they throw the fly sweep. I saw the actual, the Niners, they brought, it was either Kittle or Juszczyk in motion, and then he stops right about where the quarterback is and turns around and goes back the other way, and now he's a lead blocker. And then they pull a guy, and there's like two jet players. Now, they're terrible, but there was only two players out there, and there was three blockers. So they try to isolate you and then just get you guessing almost. Mm-hmm. And so and they execute it so well. It's like I don't see them screwing up, and two guys blocking the same guy. They just execute it really well. But just in general, though, what Lynch is talking about is it's a lot harder to play defense, and especially because of what he's about to talk about.
Yeah, Jim. Before you jump in, we'll play the cut here that Dave's going to smile from ear to ear after hearing.
Yeah, I think the other thing, the rules for the health and safety. You know, I think a lot of the intimidation people used to. You know, if they were going to go across the middle, they were going to pay a price. And that was clean. It was legal. It was the way the game was played. But there's been a shift. And so there's not stuff put on film. You know, I remember Ronnie Lott used to tell me, you know, when I was at Stanford, you know, you put stuff on film so guys know they don't come in there for free. They're going to pay a price. And that would last. You put a big hit on someone, that would last for an entire year as people were watching film. And so that there was that intimidation factor that slowed people down. Now, I think offensive players know that they're protected.
Dave is smiling, Jim.
I'll bet he is, and for good reason. Yeah, I was just thinking about Cam Chancellor and whether certainly he'd be effective, but he'd be getting a lot more penalties these days than he got back when he played. And, you know, you just, case in point, you look at Bobby Wagner, the penalty that he drew hitting the tight end, and it shouldn't have been a penalty. And it wouldn't even, an official wouldn't even have thought to throw a flag 10 years ago on that play. It would have just been a normal play. You throw in the offensive holding, how they're not calling that as much this year. And I still contend, I mean, pass interference, they seem to, it's almost, I mean, the receiver's always like, you know, making the motion with the flag if he's not getting one. So it's incredibly difficult to play defense.
Yeah, you know, that is a big part of the game. And that's where I've just worried a little bit about the game is that, you know, you're trying to make an inherently unsafe game safe. And I think that's a fool's errand. But I just wonder if it's going to get to the point where you just can't hit anybody. I mean, you just jump on their back and drag them down or push them down or whatever. Yeah, but, you know, and some of the way they're calling it, I mean, they've got to find a middle ground. I was watching the quarterback. It was Jalen Ramsey and whoever the quarterback was. I don't think it was Alex Smith. They were playing the Washington football team. And the quarterback comes and, you know, and Jalen Ramsey ultimately ends up getting a penalty for head-to-head. But his head drops a little bit, like maybe 5 or 6 inches. But you know why his head drops? It's because he's trying to get his shoulder down. Mm-hmm. You know, and unless your head is up your keister, it's about 6 inches from your shoulder. So wherever your shoulder goes, your head's going to follow. And then you look at the quarterback, and his head dropped about 18 inches. Like he was entirely initiated the hit. So I just feel like there needs to be some room for those who are like, hey, you know what? You kind of deserved that one. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry you got a concussion, but that's your fault. So, but yeah, what John's talking about there is the intimidation part of it. And yeah, and quarterbacks, this was Moyer who we'll talk to today at what, 4:30?
Mm-hmm.
He used to say that they should penalize the quarterbacks for throwing hospital balls.
Yeah.
I'm sure some receivers wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
Well, like you're trying to get me killed out here.
Cam Newton did that to his receiver. Was it N'Keal Harry or whoever Quentin Diggs hit?
Yeah, I can't remember who that was.
But yeah, I mean, it was Maura knows. Yeah. Maybe not. All right. So
she was doing something else.
Yeah, I put her on the spot. But yeah, it just it needs. I can tell a little bit that the way he answered that question is that he's not quite as accepting of the new rules.
Which is why your smile got a little bigger, a little bigger as the cut was going on.
That's why he's a Hall of Fame safety.
That's exactly why. One more from John talking about their running game, their running concept. Says it's the same stuff that was run years ago. It's just the illusion of complexity.
I think the thing they've done, John, it's, you know, sometimes Kyle and Mike McDaniel, those guys will talk about the illusion of complexity, you know. So I think if you break it down, it's very much the same zone running scheme. We implement some gap stuff as well with pullers, but it's really the basis, the foundation is that zone running scheme. Now we've put a lot of lipstick on it with all this motion going every direction, and they do a tremendous job of, and that all that's trying to do is gain any advantage that we can. But the foundation's the same stuff that Mike was running years ago.
They put some lipstick on it, pretty it up a little bit, but it's the same stuff underneath.
Well, that's kind of interesting real quick, Jim. I was going to say, you know, that there was some stats last year about pre-snap motion and stuff like that. And that's something that they do really well. Because, you know, the Seahawks hadn't done a lot of the pre-snap motion, but like I said, they'll bring a guy in motion, then he'll fake a fly sweep, and then, you know, they do all kinds of things, like he said, you know, where you're kind of splitting the defense in almost thirds sometimes. Sometimes they'll fake something to the side laterally and then to the other side out on the perimeter and then throw like a middle screen in the middle of the field. So they're just trying to spread you out. They're trying to get space, and they're doing a really good job of it.
Well, yeah, they are. I love that he's an old school guy that's adapting and admitting that it's still the same stuff that we used back in the day. Yeah, so that's very cool. And then defensively, I mean, the 49ers are still getting it done. They're doing a good job of defending every blade of grass. I guess it helped last week that Cam Newton was so far off, but, boy, that's a formidable challenge that the Seahawks have coming in here. And I love it when the 49ers play the Seahawks and John gets those interviews with John Lynch. And it's pretty insightful for sure.
Yeah, I like hearing from it. That's a good combo they've got there. I hate the 49ers, but I think they've got a great head coach and a great GM. So they seem to be in a good spot. Coming up, we'll ask the professor his takeaways from talking with John Lynch, get his thoughts on tonight's Falcons-Panthers game. As well, if you guys have questions for John, text him in right now, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll speak with John Clayton next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.